I'm ready.
Why are you looking at your
phone?
I'm
just turning off the sound to be polite.
Well.
You should try it sometime.
I'm very polite. and you should know that we're already rolling. So, what's going on, everybody? And welcome to the next episode of The Next 90 with Nick. I am your host, Nick. And this is The Next 90 with Nick. This is the podcast all about leveling up your life 90 days at a time and accomplishing more in a 90-day period than most people and most human beings will in 1 to 2 years. As you can tell, I am not alone in the studio, and I have probably my most controversial guest ever. not in the way of her beliefs or anything like that, but mostly I'm probably what she's going to say about me. So I have my friend, my business partner, my right hand, my
therapist,
part-time therapist, my conscience when it wants to wander down dark alleys, and just an overall great human being. I have Miss Heather Griffin in the studio. Welcome.
Thank you for having me, even though I didn't know this was happening 5 minutes ago.
Well, that's kind of much like our life and
our
relationship, right?
Mm-hmm.
You just kind of never really know.
It's always a surprise. You never know what you're going to get.
So why don't you introduce yourself and what you do for a living and how you and I know each other.
Well, my name's Heather Griffin. I originally worked for Nick about 10 years ago, and we worked together for a couple of years, built a really great business, and parted ways, and came back together about 5 years ago, and partnered this time to build Media Mix, and yep. We have a number of other ventures we're talking about working on.
Yeah, and so we partnered in Media Mix. How many employees do we have now over there at Media Mix?
85-ish.
85-ish.
Yeah. Yep.
And what is your role there?
I do everything. Wait, Nick looks pretty and he's shiny, and then I do all the work.
Hey,
so that's about what happens.
I've been described as shiny before. That's
yeah, funny. You are actually very shiny and pretty. So basically, I run the day-to-day operations of the company and make sure that we're on track with the targets and goals that you set.
Yeah. So Heather, as she said, we started working together. Shit.
2007.
Yeah, 2006, maybe 2007. Yeah. And so needless to say, like all the stuff that I talk about my podcast, like from where I was to the rise and the fall, both financially and emotionally, Heather has actually kind of got a front row seat to that. Mm-hmm. But let's talk about when you first met me.
Okay. So, first of all, never go on a job, interview from a Craigslist ad. I think that's like a good life lesson for everyone listening.
Well, but that's how we get a lot of our employees.
We've moved on to Indeed because we've risen up. So I was on a Craigslist ad sort of thing, and I got an interview to go for a call center manager position. I walk into this building and I look around, and there are all these like half naked women models on the walls and pictures. And I'm thinking, I'm here for a mortgage call center interview. This is so weird.
Do you think it was like a casting call?
I thought something shady was happening for sure. There's like chandeliers hanging from the ceiling in the call center, and I meet these two wonderful, nice people, very, very young, very vibrant, lots of energy, didn't ask me a single question the entire interview. So I'm interviewing with them, and they're all of a sudden, they're like, you've got to meet Nick, you're going to love him. So
what do they say my role was?
They're just like, oh, he's a business partner, and he gives us guidance, and you really need to meet him. I think he's really going to like you. So they asked me to stick around for a little bit longer, so I go back in the lobby with all the naked women hanging on the walls, and I'm like, what is going on here?
First of all.
They were nude. Some of them were nude.
They were not nude. There was a modeling agency or a pseudo modeling agency that was
promotional model.
Promotion model, yes. It was a promotional model agency that was being run out of a
call center?
No, it was in that adjacent office. And the lobby was actually a really cool call center. Like they made it look really cool.
It did. Turquoise with chandeliers hanging out.
It was kind of cool. And a lot of the stuff we modeled ours off of, not
minus the modeling stuff.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So there wasn't half naked people.
Okay,
hanging
there
out
were half naked pictures of people.
For the promotional agency. Which I had nothing to do with.
Well, that could be argued, but we won't go into that story. Okay, so then in walks Nick, and he's wearing, I will say Ed Hardy, but he will say Christian Ottinger.
It was Christian Ottinger.
He had sequins on his shirt and cowboy boots on. was really confusing.
First of all, they weren't sequins.
They were like sequins. Rhinestones?
Rhinestones.
Okay,
thank you.
I'm
like
sorry.
Sequins like, is like a cheerleader. Like, at least rhinestone has a little bit of a... Rhinestones are expensive,
by the way.
It was
pretty douchey either way.
Wow.
I mean there's no argument there. So he walks in and he sits down. And
I think I had True Religion jeans.
It was bad. It was not good. Even back then, like it was at the height of all this stuff, but he was to the extreme.
I think it looked pretty good.
Yeah. And he sits down and he asked me like two or three questions, found out who I worked for previously, who was kind of a big name in the industry, and is like, "You need to meet my business partners." And we wrapped up that interview. Then I drove down and met his business partners.
No, but first of all, like, we were in this crazy like growth phase, and I was completely out of my league. I'd grown the business fairly successfully. I think we were doing like, I don't know, 6 or 7 million a year. And I had a faux hawk, and I had a faux management style. I didn't really know how to operate a business. I was always great at like the vision and the big picture stuff, but I didn't really know how to run a big business. Heather had been able to successfully scale multiple businesses in and around kind of quote unquote call center, even though we hate those
terms. Not our favorite word, yeah.
Right, and so I've never been in, to this day actually, even with the six figure people that we interview these days, I never was in an interview where a person, a man or woman, was more prepared than Heather. She actually had like a fucking binder and it had like quick tabs that she could like, you know,
flip
to
show work examples. Yeah.
And
yeah.
So I asked a couple of questions and then I said, okay, well, this sounds great. And you always ask this, like, do you have any questions of me? And she's like, oh, well, actually, I do. That's on the pink tab. Actually, it's not pink, probably, because she'd be like,
of course, it's not pink.
Like an anti-feminist thing. She's like, it's on the green tab because that's primarily a man's color. So let me turn it there.
Let me
emasculate you at this.
Basically, I interviewed him and he didn't pass. So I don't know why I took the job.
Oh, but yeah, I was going to say, they ended up working there. So she had this like laundry list of questions. I was like, oh, this is fucking perfect. Let's go over. And we built out this new office and we didn't know what the hell we were going to do with it or how we were going to fill it up. And so, first of all, we thought we couldn't afford her, even though we were like, the truth was we just didn't want to have the money come out of our pocket into anybody else's. But I remember you and I sat in, we hired you, and you and I sat in my office for like, how long was that?
I felt like it was like 6 weeks, maybe longer.
No, I don't think it was that long.
It felt like that long.
I know, I only think it was like a week or 2 weeks. Yeah.
No, it was weeks.
So I'm like, I'm picturing I'm going to hire this person who's like totally dialed in and has like spreadsheets to like literally spreadsheets that the Pentagon probably would like go cross-eyed looking at. And I thought I was just going to say, here. And like, she sat in my office for days, if not weeks, and was like, well, what about this? I'm like, fuck, I don't know. And then like, I wanted her just to go. And she's like, no, we have to do this and we have to do that and we have to do this. And I'm like, this stuff is not important.
Every journey starts with the first step.
Right. Well, this
one step at a time.
Yeah, this was like 18,000 painful slow steps. But to Heather's credit, we ended up taking that and we turned 7 million into about 40 million a year.
Very quickly. Yeah.
I mean, that was actually probably part of the
problem. Yes.
So
too much money too fast.
Yeah, we went from, I don't even know, 25 employees,
20 agents to 500. Yeah.
How many W-2s did we give out that year? I remember it was like a ridiculous amount.
Oh yeah, I mean, there was with the turnover like and everything. 2000, yeah, that sounds about
2000
right.
2000 W-2s. Mm-hmm. So 2000 people came through our doors, went through Heather's training. So I want to go back to that moment, like what you saw in me, like in those kind of humble beginnings, and then kind of the unraveling of that person.
Well, I think you have always been a dichotomy in my eyes. I think even from the beginning, I was a little bit half con man, maybe half God. I don't know. Like, the definition of genius is half brilliance and half insanity. And I felt like even when I met you that first day, first you walk in, I was like, oh, this guy, oh my gosh, what is he wearing? And then after talking to you and seeing how genuine and honest you seemed, that's always been how my view has been, even from the beginning. So I think when we first sat down, I realized, hey, you're committed to your business. You were showing up early. You were there before the business opened. You were there when the business closed, and you had a commitment level to making this grow. And then your passion for people. Even, I think the first week I met you, you told me you wanted to be a motivational speaker.
Did I,
right?
Really?
Yeah, yeah. Right when we first met, you had this this desire to change people's lives. So I saw all the good in you. And I think even through the bad times, I've always connected and believed that you are the better version or the best version of yourself. So that's, you know, people who know me know I'm very ethical. I'm rigid. Don't be shocked. I have control issues, which is why I have spreadsheets.
Carbon fiber is rigid. You're like a whole new level.
I know what I believe, and I stick to my convictions. So sometimes when your behavior was counter to my convictions, lots of times, what I've hung on to is the fact that I think I know your heart. At the end of the day, you are this person, the one on this podcast, and you are not the person that I watched you struggle with. So in the beginning, I thought, he's douchey. Look at what he's wearing. Oh my gosh, is that a sequin? No, it's a rhinestone.
Lots of them.
So many of them. I mean, there are so many doing Soldier Boy on the top of
someone's
desk. I mean,
that was fun.
I've seen some crazy things happen, and these are the easy ones. So I think when I first met you, I could see that you're driven. I knew that you were competent, and most importantly, you really cared about your employees. That was one thing that's been constant even now. Mm. If we go through the years that we've worked together, we've given cars away to people. We've given, changed people's lives through numerous different ways. And anytime. College education, full set of teeth, like paid for a wedding. And even my wedding, I was short $3,000 and you wrote me a check and you wouldn't let me pay you back. So that person is who I know you are. And all that other stuff is kind of noise around it. And I've been able to see you transition away from the things you didn't love about your life and into the things that you do.
And I think that was part of the problem with why I went through some of those downtimes is, I mean, you're one of the very, not unique, but like people that like are in my work and personal life that have seen, I was with Nicole, like when we met.
Yeah.
I was with Nicole when we met. And then I kind of
imploded that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Implode would be a kind word. I nuked that thing.
Yep.
And then you saw me kind of go through a myriad of bad decisions and bad women, trying to like ultimately find myself when I already knew who I was. I was just scared to fully step into it.
Yeah, you had to grow through all of that. You had to go through the process.
I traded in the shiny t-shirt for shiny cars.
You certainly dress better now. So let's just say
I just wear like Lulu pants and a neck.
I know. Just stick to what you can handle.
That's not saying
much. Do the things you're good at.
Oh, what was it like when I showed up to work in the red Ferrari?
Oh my gosh, we're back to douche level. Like that was, he would bring his Ferrari and not just drive. First of all, by the way, most of the employees
I know where you're going.
Were making minimum wage.
This is not true. What
this
about
is
to say.
True. This He'd park in handicap diagonal in front of the building and walk in.
No.
Yes, you did. I remember. I have a great memory.
No, so I was so proud. Like, first of all, I wanted a Ferrari my whole life.
Mm-hmm.
I had Ferrari posters up on my wall. Mm-hmm. My dad was never going to be in a position to buy a Ferrari. And I remember when I finally got it, I was so proud. Nobody knows this story, or maybe some people know the story. Mm-hmm. But the first thing I did, actually, was I got in the Ferrari, and I drove from Newport Beach to Chino Hills. And so, for those of you that don't live in California or don't know where that is, it's about, I don't know, 45-minute drive. Mm-hmm. But Chino Hills is, like, inland. It's, you know, it's not, like, glamorous. It's a nice bedroom community, middle-class America. And I come rolling up, and my dad is he's handicapped. He has multiple sclerosis. He used to be a marathon runner. And it's a whole nother story, but multiple sclerosis is like the best and worst thing that has ever happened to our family. And so he gets really cold. It's a neurological disease. So his hands get cold, his feet get cold. And so he has this electric wheelchair at the old house that he would roll out around 2 or 3 in the afternoon. The sun hits the front part of the house and he would just warm himself. And it was like, and he'd ultimately like fall asleep there. And so I knew he'd be there and he had nowhere else to go. Actually had plenty more to go, but he just couldn't get there. And so I come rolling up in the Ferrari and I come pulling up in the driveway and he's like, look, and he can't tell. I remember getting out and he's like, what the heck? Where did you get that thing? I said, I bought it. I got this Ferrari. And he just was like beaming.
What a great moment.
From ear to ear. And then he started calling all the neighbors on the phone and I was giving everybody rides and he couldn't physically get in. I couldn't get him in because I couldn't transfer him from his wheelchair to this
flow to the ground, right, honey.
Your butthole's like 6 inches off the ground doing 200 miles an hour. It's quite
remember how we talked about not using that word anymore?
Butthole?
Yeah, that's the one.
So that's funny that we have to have a conversation about me not using that word.
We actually do.
So anyway, so I give that picture to you only to create context, because that's like who I was, right?
Yeah.
That's like my core. Like it was like I've always, you know, this thing that was filled with light.
Mm-hmm.
And then somehow in the process of not loving myself, I kind of covered it up with soot. So that being said, I never parked in the goddamn handicapped spot because one, my dad is handicapped. What I did do, I did drive the Ferrari to work. The first, when I got the Ferrari, I drove it every day for like 30 days because I was like so in love with it. where I did park, and it was diagonal, you're right.
Uh-huh.
I parked in the back. Remember where we had that that roll-up door?
Yep.
It was next to the handicap stall and the exit. Oh my gosh,
this story's sounding more and more like the story I just told.
So
you parked diagonally in the handicap zone.
You said diagonally in front of the office
sorry,
the handicap zone.
Behind the office diagonally.
Not in the handicap.
I don't know what this has to do with 90-day challenges.
I'm just trying to prove a point. So you can obviously see the dynamic that Heather and I had. So what was crazy was that I went through a gnarly breakup with my business partners, and
let's not tell a story.
No, we don't have to tell a story. But I want to bring color to is that last day where we had how many employees?
Hundreds.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like what happened? Who? I mean, Heather's like, hey, look, we're gonna lay these people off. We just hit some snags and we had to change our business model very quickly and we didn't think we were going to have to do that.
Mm-hmm.
So now we have to lay off all these people. And to your credit, you're like, look, we're going to do this right. We're going to set up a job fair. I mean, we did
resume writing. We did a job fair and 100% of the employees had a job before the weekend was over.
Yeah. So when we let them go.
Yep.
But like, who was on the front lines of that?
You. It was a really hard conversation. It was a really hard moment. We pulled everyone together. We pulled everyone around. I think some people might have suspected something was coming, but I don't think the majority of them had any idea. It was business as normal one day, and then the very next day, we were pulling them in and laying them all off. And you made the announcement, and it was a hard moment for all of us. We did everything we can to prepare around, and I'm proud to say everyone was employed by the time we were done. But that moment was really hard, and you were standing there alone without your other business partners. I don't think they even came in that day.
No, I think they were there, they just didn't
come out of their office. They weren't standing there.
No,
you were standing there by yourself. I was standing next to you. But
yeah. And I mean, to deliver that was like, I think I was 29 or 30 years old, and it was like
painful.
It was so painful. Well, it was painful for me because like it was just this series of like failures that I thought, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, now looking back, they were such the greatest gifts, but there was like these series of failures like stacking on top of each other. And my business partners made a run at Heather and they said, we're going to keep her. And
this is a part I was hoping we wouldn't talk about. It was a Jerry Maguire moment. And Nick's like, come with me and my fish. I've got nothing. And I talked to Nick. They both, all of them called me that night. And Nick, I talked to first his partners and said, whatever you're paying, we're going to double it. We've got you. Stay with us. Like Nick has gone off the wires. He's just like, he's done. So I immediately call Nick and say, hey, what's going on? And you're like, I don't know what I'm going to do with my life. I don't know. Like I got enough money to last me for a while. Like I don't fucking have a clue. Like, but like, yeah, you know, stick around, but I don't know what I'm doing. So it was kind of like,
but I also didn't say anything bad about them. I said,
absolutely.
I said,
if
you want to go with them, like,
I understand. Like I have nothing to offer right now.
I would love, and he said, I never hold you back.
I'd love to work with you still, but I don't know what I'm doing yet. And so, I went with your business partners, which turned out to not work out well for me.
Actually though, I mean, we could say that, but like it all kind of all things kind of
yeah you say that you're more forgiving than me.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah,
well, we won't digress down that
yeah,
road.
We won't go
could,
down
we could
road.
Do a whole nother series on that.
So
Heather and I lost we didn't lose track of each other, but we just went our separate ways. She had a need and a want and desire. Like she was married and they were getting ready, they wanted to start a family. And so I was trying a bunch of shit. And it was weird because I felt like a one-hit wonder, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Even though I had a previously successful business that went out of business, and then a second successful business, and we built another one inside of that. So we had two multiple businesses that were running, and then I just felt like, God damn, like what am I doing? Like I can't figure this out.
Mm-hmm.
And so then I started like just giving away my value and started partnering with the wrong people.
Mm-hmm.
And you always had this uncanny ability to like, you know, see the predators coming, and I'm like,
mm-hmm.
oh, this is a lovely alligator. I would love to stick my head in your
mouth.
Yes,
you're not the best judge of character out the gate.
I'm actually pretty good.
You're getting better. Yeah, you're getting better.
So, how long was it, that gap?
5 years.
Was it 5 years?
Yeah. I mean, 2010... No. Probably we separated 2010. We came back 2013
because it
13. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So
3 years.
3 years. Yeah.
Yeah. 3 years. And then, did you reach out to me or did I reach out to you?
I texted you because I was concerned and said, "Hey, I'm looking for some extra work. Just reaching out to you to see if you need any consulting." Mm. I texted you and you texted me back saying, "Hey, I was your ears must be ringing because I was just thinking about you. Let's get together and talk."
Yeah. So we went and had breakfast. And like my life had dramatically shifted.
Yes.
My grandfather had died, and which was kind of like the first catalyst that I talk about in my origins mm-hmm. podcast. I reconnected with Nicole. Mm-hmm. I hadn't talked to Nicole in 2.5 years. I let mm-hmm. go of names that don't need to be mentioned in relationships. Like when I came back with Nicole, like it was tough. Not in the fact that being with Nicole was tough, is that like I had to like let go of a lot of things that I was holding on to, and a lot of that was people.
Mm-hmm.
You know, some of mm-hmm. it was vices, but a lot of it, like the vices, were almost easier than the people, because I'm such a people pleaser. Mm-hmm. You know, but you were married
and pregnant.
Well, yeah, you were pregnant. Jesus Christ.
And then he went around telling everyone it was like going into a race with a five-legged horse. Was that what you're saying?
No, like an injured horse.
An injured horse, yeah. Oh, you think you're buying a thoroughbred, but they're broken because I was pregnant.
Oh, but it was.
He told like 10 people that.
No, it's like you know, you like she talked me into going, like doing this stuff, and then she drops the fact that she's pregnant. It's like,
I told you I was pregnant before I convinced you to do this.
But it's like buying the horse is.
First of all, you're buying me in this scenario. Secondly, you're saying there's something wrong with me because I'm creating a life inside my body. So there's that whole thing.
And you didn't even mention that I could refer to you as a horse.
that's normal. You've called me worse. That's one horse, of the nicer
horse,
ones
with
you've
an
called
S,
me.
With an S. Horse with an S. And so anyway, she's like, "Hey, I wanna make a run at this again." I'm like, "Fuck, are you kidding me? Like, I don't mm-hmm. wanna get back into this call center space." And mm-hmm. but our lives were in much different positions, mm-hmm. right?
Yep.
Like before we were young in our 20s and like just
Lots of vodka,
cigarettes,
I mean, yep.
all sorts in the office, actually, uh-huh. simultaneously.
Lots of day drinking back then. Yeah.
It's crazy. But now, like, our life was filled with a lot more mm-hmm. purpose, mm-hmm. you know, and now looking back, it's so easy to see, right?
Mm-hmm.
And now we've added to that. And so we get back together and we talked about, like, okay, if we're going to do this, like, we're going to do it
right. This time. Mm-hmm.
And we had, like, we had every reason to fail. Every fucking reason to fail. Outside of having a wounded thoroughbred.
Oh, here we go.
Like, I mean, can you, like, those first couple of months?
So stressful.
I quote unquote bought this business from a guy that Heather was working with, and then we mm-hmm. rebranded it Media Mix and kind of rolled all the assets in. Well, the big thing that we were purchasing was this, like, one big customer. And this one big customer pretty much paid all the bills, right? Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And there was like a little bit of profit, but then the idea was I was going to add all my clients on top of it, and mm-hmm. that was going to be like
the profit.
Mm-hmm. Oh, and I was like, oh, we're going to be back. We're going to be making money in no time. And then what happened?
That long-standing client that we had canceled, they actually went out of residential mortgages.
And how long?
Weeks into to buying it. That bread and butter client just poof, disappeared.
Yeah, it was November, yep. The deal was done, and I mm-hmm. think like after Thanksgiving, they mm-hmm. let us know.
Yep.
And they shut off at the first of the yep. year. And we're like, what the fuck? Mm-hmm. And now I found myself like back in the position with all these employees.
Uh-huh.
A pregnant partner. Uh-huh. I had just gotten, no, Nicole and I were just about to get married.
Yeah.
Yep. Holy crap.
That first year was crazy.
I had a wedding to pay for.
Uh-huh.
And I was leaving on my honeymoon. And then not only on top of that, did the client quit, but we got kicked out of the
building
office.
We were in.
Yeah, the building we were in went bankrupt and they kicked the tenants out. And that was right before mm-hmm. my honeymoon.
Yeah.
Oh my God. And so that's what I want some of you guys to understand, is that like some of you see like where we're at now, or you mm-hmm. know, specifically me where I'm at now, and you think that it's just been like rainbows and butterflies. Well, first of all, I want to bring Heather on for not only entertainment value, but for radical honesty, uh-huh. you know, and because like I
don't have a filter when it comes to you.
Well, yeah. And you're not going to let me get away with anything either. So, but like we went through some hard shit,
mm-hmm.
like hard stuff. And I remember being on my honeymoon, and I was across the world. I was mm-hmm. in Thailand, mm-hmm. and just pulling that off alone was a miracle, like mm-hmm. financially for me. Secondly, like to be able to go away. I think I was gone for 2 payroll cycles.
Yep.
And I remember I would get up in the morning. It would be like 3 a.m. or 2 a.m. in Thailand, and I'd be on the phone with you for mm-hmm. hour and a half. Yep. And we're trying to like rob Peter to pay Paul, stitch it all together, and then I would go to sleep. And then I would get some peace, like, oh no, actually, then I would check in mm-hmm. when I woke up, because that would be the end of your workday. Mm-hmm. So I would sleep for like, you know, 4 or 5 hours to be the end of your workday. All right, good, we're still in business. And then I'd have about 12 hours of like peace because you guys uh-huh. were sleeping.
Yep.
And then it would start over again. This is on my honeymoon, people.
Yeah, like, I remember kept thinking, don't say anything bad. He needs to have at least one good day. Like, don't tell him. I think, okay, I don't need to tell him that check's not coming yet. I'll tell him on Friday because maybe it'll come before then, because I don't want his whole honeymoon to suck.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. Yeah, it was stressful.
Yeah, it was totally stressful. But we crawled out of that. And then...
Well, plus I was like 7 months pregnant or 8 months pregnant at the time when you were on your honeymoon.
And then I got back and you left on maternity leave.
Yeah, then they came back and I went on maternity leave and you were pregnant.
Yes. Okay. Yes. We came home from that... Nicole, I always say we, but my wife came home pregnant. It's a team sport. Like it, I did.
Don't even start that.
All right, I was there. I was there. I impregnated. Yeah.
Yeah, you impregnated, but you weren't pregnant.
I was.
Okay. Well.
So anyway, so then I got pregnant. Then Heather went out on maternity leave, and she takes like the world's longest maternity leave.
Oh my gosh.
Ever known to man. And I'm the world's kindest boss that...
Oh, you let me pump? Is that what you want to say? No, because that's a law. It's a federal law.
I'm talking about pay, compensation-wise. Like, full fucking pay. Don't.
Did anyone call me? You're going to say no, but so many people called me.
I didn't call you.
Do you remember when I came back in 2 weeks after I had Liam because you and Danny were fighting with each other?
Who was the other person that worked with Danny? There was a girl. Like, there was Danny and before Fiorella. Oh, shit.
Was probably there? Not even supposed to say that. Uh-oh. I don't remember.
Anyway. Well, yes, I did call Heather a couple of times because I was, like, mm-hmm. dying.
Well, I mean,
meanwhile, people, I'm not getting paid. Not only am I not getting paid, but I'm, like, throwing mm-hmm. money into the business. Mm-hmm. I have this other profitable business that's, like, tanking. And Nicole's going, what the hell are
what
we
are
doing?
You doing? Yeah.
But you know what? Like, to Nicole's credit, and probably mostly to yours, is that she's like, I believe in you and Heather. Mm-hmm. And it was like, she believes in me, but then like...
The team, yeah.
You and I together, like, mm-hmm. she's always like believed in. Because yep. she knows that like, you are have like a straight line for morals and ethics, mm-hmm. and that like, you also do see the good things in me,
yeah.
like Nicole did.
Yeah.
If I didn't have you two women in my life... You
who
know,
knows what
it would be drastically different. But how ironic is it that my life partner and my business partner kind of all both like have
similar.
A very strong mm-hmm. moral compass and but also the capacity to see beyond some of the shortcomings, mm-hmm. you know?
Yeah. So you're very lucky.
I am lucky, but I'm also a hard ass worker. So, it's a combination of luck and a lot of hard fucking work.
Let's look at those first 2 years we had. I had a baby. You got married. You got pregnant. You guys had a pregnant and had a baby. Then I got pregnant again 30 days after your wife, Nicole got pregnant 30 days after me. So we had 4 kids and a wedding in the first like
and
two or 3 years.
And
we moved twice.
Three office moves. We got kicked out of our first office, like lost a big fucking client. I'm talking, guys, this is $800,000 a year in revenue gone overnight. And then we had to move into this office, and it was a shitty situation. And we actually got sued over it, and won. But like we had him leave that office. We went into another office, which was like, holy shit! It was like
it was like Boiler
Room meets Wolf of Wall Street.
Yeah,
I mean, it was
bad.
And it was like, what are we doing? Like, I remember having a conversation with you, like saying, "This is not us. Like, I don't want to do mm-hmm. this. Like, I don't want to mm-hmm. keep jumping around and." And so I'm like, I'm going to go get this big office. And you were like,
no, what are you thinking? Yeah. Like we can barely afford what we're doing now. Why are you going to go build out a massive big office?
And I'm like, we're going to make this happen. You're like, we're not even going to qualify. I'm like, we're going to qualify. And I remember like I pulled out all the stops to make this office that we have. It's beautiful. You can go on our site, MediaMix365.com. Mm-hmm. I think it's under Tribe or Company. You can go and see the pictures. We're in an A-plus building here in Orange County, right off the freeway by the airport. Like massive,
yeah,
big,
I thought you were crazy.
Massive big organizations have offices inside our office, like Sharp, and I can't mention the other one, but it's a big lending company. Mm-hmm. And then there's us.
Yeah. They love us.
And so we built out that office. Uh-huh. Nevin was born.
I was on maternity leave when you guys moved in.
I know.
Yeah. And I came back, I think, like the first day.
What's crazy is the company that you were working for, that in their calendar year, they did about $900,000. Mm-hmm. Our first calendar year together, November to November, with all those changes and the babies and everything, we did $3 million, $3.3 million. Yep. And then we went $7.5 million, then we went $10 million, and then now we're, you know, 15-ish.
Yeah.
And like, it's fucking crazy. Mm-hmm. I remember you can't, I think I was out on maternity leave.
Wait, you can't go on maternity
whatever
leave.
Whatever it's called.
You didn't give birth to a baby, Nick. I want you to understand
this. I gave birth to like two babies in that office.
It didn't
like,
happen.
No, but was it you that came in that was crying, or was it me that was crying?
I was crying.
Or was it both?
Okay, Nick cries like three, used to. You've actually been really good at not crying recently, but used to cry twice a week, right? And I mean, there's a company running joke. Like, I mean, we took numbers. We wrote down how many times will Nick cry this year in 2016? And there are people in the hundreds.
No.
Yes, there were. Come I put on. 52 because I figured cry once a week. But we had walked in. Also, in my defense, I had just given birth to a baby. So we walked in.
A little hormonal.
And we were, and you were having the meeting and you're like, Heather, say something. And like, I just started crying. Like, I didn't believe in it. I didn't understand it. I thought it was an exorbitant amount of money to spend. So
on
things don't look pretty. Yeah, it's a call center. These are call center people. They don't need something fancy. And I didn't believe in it. But I mean, just the rise we got in production from moving to that office more than paid for the cost of the office. And it's then paid us back tenfold.
And I told you it was purpose over
profits.
Yeah, purpose over profits.
Yep.
And we sat down and we said, our companies are going to be sustainable,
scalable, and ethical.
Right.
Yep.
If we can't sustain it, right, then we don't want to do it. If we can't scale it, then we don't want
to
do it. And first and foremost, it has to be ethical. Mm-hmm. And you know,
and those things equal our legacy.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Exactly. And because we put the people first, because we put the purpose first, the profits came, and they haven't always come like as much as we wanted them to.
Yeah.
I mean, we've sacrificed
quite a bit.
Yeah. But I truly believe that's why we were able to get through some of our hard times.
Yeah.
I mean, last year,
competitors fell out of our industry.
Last year was fucking rough.
Yeah. It was painful and it was scary and it was stressful.
Yeah.
But we weathered the storm and now,
We're reaping the benefits.
Yeah. Now we're reaping the benefits.
Yeah. So I want to go talk about specifically, you know, kind of like what I've been doing, my growth from your lens over the last 3 years, you know, specifically starting Warrior.
Yep.
Because I know you know that you see the good in Warrior. You also see the things that, you know, like are kind of maybe I don't know what I want to say here, but that are like a little bit against the grain of your belief system.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, First of all, I would just like to say that prior to Warrior, you picked a networking group that I...
Don't even fucking go there.
Okay. I'm not going to say
no,
it.
No, you can. I don't care.
Can we say that word on the
can
radio?
Say whatever the fuck you
okay.
want.
Okay. Anyways, you picked a networking group prior to this that I, like you said, how I can sniff out bad people right away.
Right.
You picked
Let's
this
not
group.
Mention them because I don't
I won't
end
say
up
their name.
Lawsuit.
I don't want you to end up in jail. Although if they
in jail.
I'm going to
end up in jail.
I don't want you to be sued. We'll say, okay, I won't say their name. But you picked this group, and I'm very good at sussing out bad people, right? And I knew it the second I met the guy. I knew it. Then not only did he pick the networking group, he sent me to the networking group. And like,
I wanted to get your opinion. I trusted your opinion.
I didn't. I told him right out the gate, this is not good. This is not the right thing. And then a little bit of Googling quickly found me lots of disturbing things about them, including a wooden dildo in a forest with a bunch of men, right? And apparently it was to represent
not,
like something.
Which is not what I subscribe to.
Yeah.
And
he did go back after that.
And for the record, I was never in the forest ever with this group and or a wooden dildo, yet alone.
Wooden dildos come to mean so many things in our life after this whole thing happened.
Let alone collectively with a wooden dildo.
Yeah, so he felt, you know, Nick wants to find the best in everything and he wants to believe everyone's good, but this guy
everything
I could see coming
awesome.
Immediately. Yeah, I could see this guy was bad news right away. But Then he came to me and sat me down. He's like, I want to do this warrior thing. You have to watch this video. He showed me the website. I thought, that sounds interesting. And then he said, it's going to cost a lot of money. Right. How do you feel about that?
Well, the first time I paid the for Warrior Week out of my own pocket. Yeah. But then I paid for everything.
The sign up afterwards. Yeah, exactly. And I said,
Out of the business, by the way, which she gets a percentage of.
Yeah. Yeah, so I said, hey, if you feel good about it and you need this, go for it. But, you know, my initial impression is like, this is literally something I would never want to do. This sounds horrible. It's like my worst nightmare, having someone scream at me while I'm running up a beach. I want to die. So for me, I thought, this is not me, but this is something I think you would get. I think this is something that would help you. And then I saw you come back from it, and your energy and your commitment and your level of interest in the business and your path, and you started writing things down and putting goals in place, and I saw a real change in you. I think that what it's done for you that's great is that you needed a place to be vulnerable. Mm-hmm. You needed a safe place, and you need to see you weren't alone, because probably your entire life you've been surrounded by people not as talented as you, and you've never been able to have someone say, I've done all these dark things and I've done all these light things and I'm just me, and that's right. Okay. And now you had this brotherhood of men who were saying the same things as you, and you needed that. And I think you felt very lonely, because you are surrounded by a lot of compassionate people who care about you, and you felt so much shame and guilt about those bad things you had done. So when you have this moment to kind of express it and go through this process, and then also you're the most disorganized person in the world, for you to have the discipline to show up for the meetings and to do the work and to do the stack and to go through this process, it gave you the discipline you needed, and then you eventually had the focus you needed to say, I want to move in this direction, and these things don't serve me anymore,
there are still people in my life. I think, you know, some of the times there's people in my life that that just take, I give. And so because I give and I give, I get taken a lot. And to go and be a part of a group and a mastermind and a brotherhood or, you know, accountability, whatever, you know, tagline you want to put on it, that wanted nothing from me other than to hold me accountable to what I said I wanted.
Yep.
That was like crazy. And you're right. And to be able to go there and to like talk these things out of me that I've been holding on to, and and, you know, shame and guilt that still comes up, you know, like Nicole is a good woman. Like she's an amazing
woman.
She
is.
And I, you know, like I didn't always make the best decisions, and, you know, to let some of that go and to hear another man say like, hey, I'm there and look where I'm at. Cause it was also not just the fact in sharing the pain and dividing that pain, but was seeing possibilities and where they could go, you know?
Yeah, it gave you a discipline. I think it gave you a safe place to land, and it gave you clear direction. One of the things I see you do in the past is like your calendar would be booked with meetings of just people just checking in. Oh, hey, this guy. People would just drop by and chat with you for an hour or two, and it'd waste your time. And now I've seen you very deliberate with what you're doing. You're writing down what your intent looks like for the day. You're executing it. You're cutting out people who are just time sucks in your life, and you're actually seeing progress with that. So
how much have we grown together as a company and together as a, I don't want to say a couple, but a partnership.
So quite a bit. I mean, you know, out at the beginning, I was your employee, and my job was just to execute your mission, just like our last company. But over time, one of the things that I've been so grateful to have is that you've believed in me, and you've always seen me as more than I saw myself, no matter what. You know, I always saw myself as an excellent operator, executor who's great with leadership and people, but I never saw myself as a CEO or as a COO or someone who could run a business or a millionaire. I just didn't see it. I remember the first year he told me to write down my goals. I'm writing down these numbers, and I wrote down all these things around New Year's, and he scratched them all off and like quadrupled all of them. Like
I said, this is bullshit.
Yeah, like, you're not even trying. But for me to write a goal down and not hit it is shameful. Like, because I'm a type A personality, I hit every goal I ever have. I am an executioner. I will exceed expectations. So if I write a goal down and I don't hit it, I feel shame. And you said, but if you don't reach for it, you're never going to get it. And so I found that paper last year, and I had hit almost all the goals we had written down. And when you wrote that number, that salary number, I thought, that's ridiculous. I'm never going to make that in my lifetime. And then it was like, whoa, I make more than that.
Exactly. Like, and like for me, that was like a big risk too, to like put that number down, because I knew where the money was going to come from, you know. But like what all the things I've told Heather is like, you have to see yourself bigger than you are, because you'll never get there. Like how often do I send you shit like, Instagram
every day, multiple times. Yeah.
And like, mm-hmm. and I keep saying like, look, you have to do this. Like you, mm-hmm. and it's a self-serving self-interest, but really it's like, I know what this woman is capable mm-hmm. of. Like, mm-hmm. and I know that like without her, like I wouldn't be where I'm at. And so like, I want to grow, and in order for me to grow, like we have to grow together. But yep. even if we don't grow together, like I just know that alone, like you are so much more than you put on yourself. Mm-hmm. And I surround myself with people that tell me that about me. Yep. And you're one of them.
Mm-hmm.
And you're one of them. Like, you're like, what the fuck are you doing hanging out like with these turkeys mm-hmm. when you should be soaring with the eagles,
yep.
you know?
Yep. So, it happens a lot. Yeah.
And so what about like, because you've seen like a direct line of when I'm like doing the work and I'm like hitting the core floor and when I'm not. What's the difference there?
Well, the biggest impact on me is I think you get, erratic, you get scared. There's a fear there. That's what I feel like it is. And what happens with that fear when you're not doing the work and when you're not consistent is that you start spinning us. You spin your business, you spin our relationships, you spin everything because there's a fear there. And you don't have clear direction. So when you're not doing the work and you're not on this goal-oriented task, you come into the business and, you know, we might say be on a normal collection cycle and everything's fine, we're going good. And then he has 48,000 unread emails. I'm not even joking, and probably like 24,000 unread text messages. It's painful for me to see that because
I have
it's out of control.
251 unread texts.
Yeah.
I have 27,290 emails and 39 voicemails.
Yeah. See, that's a problem. So here he is not doing the work. He pops into the business. He opens up that email and looks at one email and it's like, what are you guys doing? Don't we have a process for this? Where's the plan? How come we aren't collecting? Why is this happening? Blah, blah, blah. And what happens is everyone starts spinning to get him answers really quickly. And everyone stops what they're doing to get him this answer. But we didn't need it at that moment. He needed it. And so it kind of spins
because
the business.
Of my lack of what?
There's no clarity. Mm-hmm. And there's no
certainty.
Yeah, there's no certainty in what you're doing. And it's not, I know you well enough to know it's not a mistrust. It's a you thing that you need to go through. But sometimes the team
doesn't. It is a mistrust. It's a mistrust of me.
Yeah. Well, it's not a mistrust of your staff.
Right. No, I know that. Yeah. It's a mistrust of me. And then I project that onto everybody else.
Yeah. So it spins. But when you are doing the work and you know what's there, you'll pop in, check some, like we have an end of day report, you'll reply back. And then we just realize, hey, stop copying him on everything. Because sometimes we don't know when you're going to read your email or not. So there might have been 75 conversations and 3 meetings, but you pop back into an email that's done and closed. But we all have to stop and re-explain to you, we had 35 minutes and did this thing. So plus, it's not a good use of your time. That's something to talk about, this opportunity cost, what you're doing with your time when you could be doing something more meaningful. Yep. So I feel like when you're doing the work and you're consistent, your energy, your overall state is calmer. So we have time to walk you through a whole process and explain what happened.
Right.
And when you're not and you're unsure, I feel like you're like just looking for things to see where we failed. And that's not productive.
Right.
So,
that certainty and that the clarity.
Mm-hmm.
But let's specifically talk about probably like more than 90 days now, mm-hmm. but like, what's that been like? Because as I transition into, mm-hmm. into this and this microphone and
uh-huh.
this mission of, you know, spreading what I've done to other people,
uh-huh.
what has that done like for you,
mm-hmm.
You know, as a human being? And then what changes have you seen in me
mm-hmm.
that you can attest directly to like me going all in on me?
Yeah. So first, you know, I'm really proud of you to see you do this. I remembered, you know, 10 years ago when we were sitting down, you were talking about this and I was telling you about my friend who was a motivational speaker, and I knew that's what you wanted to do and you knew it was a long shot. You knew how hard it is, but here you are doing it. Mm-hmm. So I think that's a really beautiful lesson. For me, it has done a lot of things. You know, the weird effect that was intended or not is with you exiting our business, it gave me a belief around myself that I can handle things I thought I couldn't. There's this gray area when it comes to P&Ls in my head where I don't want to see them or know them. And our CFO makes some crazy spreadsheets and mm-hmm. I get intimidated by them. But with you, you know, going off to chase your dream, it's given me an opportunity to learn where I had holes in my life and to feel confident that I've got this. And I really do. I feel like, you know, if you popped out and you're this great motivational speaker and you never came into our business, I could handle it. So for me, it's done really good things. As a friend, I feel just really proud of you. I share your information. I tell all my friends about it. So it's been positive for me. And for you, I think it's given you some peace that you've needed. There's been chaos in your life, most of it self-made, but it's giving you some peace. And I've seen you kind of grow into yourself a little bit more. I think we all know that person torturing yourself back there was insecure. Right. You were chasing love. You wanted to be loved. You wanted people to give you praise. No,
you needed all that stuff. The rhinestones and the shiny cars.
The rhinestones and the shiny cars.
Actually, I mean, I do like cars, and I will own multiple exotic cars for the record. But at that point, it was half. It was like half I needed validation, and then you know, half is actually a measure of my accomplishment. But it's like, yeah, most of that, like I tell everybody, I was financially secure and emotionally bankrupt. You know, now I'm trying to marry the two of them. Like, one of the things that I've always loved about you is that, like, you recognize that everybody is broken, right? We're all broken in
different ways,
in some way, but it's a beautiful brokenness. You know, and you've always been on a path of self discovery. I mean, you've been working on yourself for years now.
It's a forever thing.
And I think, you know, the catalyst for you was like just you, like, after, like, there's like tiny Chinese water torture with me, like, just saying, like, you can do this.
Keep saying, I don't want to be a multimillionaire. I don't care about money. Money's irrelevant to me. Like, I don't care about these things. I want this.
And I said, that's fucking bullshit, because I know you do care. You're very passionate about inspiring, helping women. You want to eradicate this whole fucking Me Too stuff, you know, like, not the Me Too movement, but like the reason why that movement exists. And that's, and you cannot do that if you don't have fucking money. That's what I'm trying to tell you people. You cannot make a difference. Like, yes, you can tell me, like, Gandhi and all these fucking people, and I will point to a massive organization that funded them, that funded them and funded their message. And so, like, I want Heather to be a millionaire, one, because I want her to feel what that's like to have financial freedom,
safety,
but two, like, so she can, like, have the opportunity to decide what the hell she wants to do. You know,
that's true. There's always bills to pay. And for me, I came from a family that didn't have a lot of money. And I've always had that fear there. It just sits there. I've always had the scarcity mindset. So it took a lot to change my beliefs. I remember, like, you were like, you know, I want you to think about the house that you want. Think about the things that you want. I was like, I don't care about any of those things. Like, I just want to, like, be home with my kids, and that's all I care about. But as we continue to go down the process, you're right. Money buys options. And
private schools, right?
Private schools. I got my kids.
One of the best private schools in the entire goddamn country. And I know that there's a great sense of pride that comes along with that.
And fear.
And fear.
Because can I sustain this till he graduates? What if I don't make this much money forever? What's going to happen?
That fear is healthy, because I think you're the one that says it, like, what's the definition of bravery? It's not the absence of fear.
Yeah, courage is an absence from fear. It's an understanding what you desire is greater than what you fear.
Exactly. And going after it. Like, that's what these next 90 challenges are all about. It's like, I had a guy that reached out to me. He's in my mastermind that I'm starting on 8/6. And he's like, dude, you gave me a lot of work to do. I'm kind of scared right now. I'm like, good. You should be scared. Like, that's what this is about. It's about me pushing you beyond what you thought was possible. And in that, you will find power. Like, you will find power like you never believed. Find power to believe that you are the fucking CEO and that you always have been. I've just, like, shown you a path in a mirror, you know, so that we together can go do great things. What can you imagine, like, what our life would be like? Without, like, this whole kind of warrior's way, but really me kind of pouring into myself, being a part of these masterminds and these 90-day challenges.
Yeah, it's been really, really great for both of us, I think, in different ways. I don't know what we would have been like. The path before this, it wasn't working for us, and we knew it. Like, you were working so hard in our business, and you were not, you weren't working on the business, and you weren't fulfilling the needs that you had in the business, and that was causing disruption in the business. And I was kind of trying to just clean up things all the time, all this time. So it wasn't a good use of either one of our time. So I think without the discipline that you learned and the clarity, and frankly, just the support network of the men that are in that group, your circle of influence and friends has drastically changed. Yeah. Yes. Long gone are the days of the wife beater thugs who are walking in to have lunch with you. And now there's these quality, great men.
Right.
Who you see who have struggled in the same ways you have, and you've seen have had these successes.
And want nothing for me. They just want to add to my life.
Yes, they want to be a part of your life for a good reason. So without this process, like, we weren't on a great path. And I don't know. It's funny, you know, we'll joke about kicking you out of the business to make it easier, but it really did help for you to ascend. So I had a moment to see that I can handle. Like, you don't know if you don't ever try.
Right.
And so with you going out and being able to chase some of your dreams
and not being that safety net, you know.
Yes,
Not that you ever needed that, but like I always felt like I was the backstop and like, I got this, okay? Actually, Heather and my team, they literally presented a plan. What was it called?
It's called the We Got This Plan.
Yeah, which means, hey, Nick, we got this. Like, you've had us, and now we have you. We've always had you, but we're going to go out, and we're going to do this, and here's the benchmarks we're going to hit. We're going to sound the alarms, and I'm like, fuck, this is crazy. Mm-hmm. Because it's actually what I've always wanted, mm-hmm. and I sit here sometimes. We're in our podcast studio, which we can actually see.
It's about
a mile away. We can see our high-rise, and it's like weird to sit here like knowing that I've got hundreds of people, mm-hmm. like, you know, mm-hmm. like basically feeling both of our dreams.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
So I told you this in a private setting, in a private mm-hmm. moment, but I'll say it here publicly, is that I gave you every reason to quit on me. I really did.
A couple times.
Here comes the crying. And
oh, look, my number's almost there. We're almost to 52.
And you didn't, you know. And mm-hmm. I think the beautiful part about our relationship is there's times where you wanted to quit, and there's mm-hmm. times where I wanted you to quit, but we never wanted to quit at the same time. And because we've done that, like, we've been able not only been able to impact our lives, but like hundreds of lives.
Yeah. Absolutely. And I think that, you know, outwardly looking sometimes, you know, it could look like, well, what are you guys doing? Why is this relationship in this weird way that it is?
Right.
And the truth of the matter is that, you know, there are very few people who've showed up for me in my life always. And from a friend standpoint, from a financial standpoint, and just they show up and you're one of them. Like, I know to this day, if I had a problem, you would be there for mm-hmm. me. And there's very few people I can just say that. And I can look back through our tenure and just think of things. I told you once my sister's school out in Lake Elsinore couldn't afford paper, so my nephews were having to bring in reams of paper, and you said, how much is paper? And you wrote a check for $1,200 and bought the whole school paper for the year. Mm-hmm. It's like, it was these moments of acts of kindness. Like, that's who you actually are. I told you about my wedding. I mean, there's just been times where you've just showed up for
right.
me. And so, you know, all the other stuff is just noise and chaos. And, you know, at the end of the day, that I know you got me, and I've got you.
Yep.
Even if I want to strangle you most of the time, or if you disrupt my feminist ways.
Well, this has been a long time coming. Heather's a huge Donald Trump fan.
Oh my gosh. Don't even start.
That could be a whole nother hour.
Yeah.
But I want to leave you with two things. One is a story.
I hate when it starts off with two things.
It's a story. So we do these morning meetings, and they kind of were like, people think like we had this like radical idea to start these morning meetings because I cared so much about the people and empowering them, and I do. But our morning meeting specifically was out of sheer survival. I was mm-hmm. like in Heather's office going, what the fuck? We're not going to be in business next week if something doesn't change. I was like, gather up everybody. And we made everybody like write down their goal on a piece of paper, and then they had to put it on as a mm-hmm. post-it note on my door. Mm-hmm. And then at the end of the day, they had to come back and say what they actually did. And it just helped raise this level of accountability through visibility mm-hmm. in this like actual physical thing. So we started these morning meetings. They became like the cornerstone of our culture. And so we move into this office, and like we're at some big milestone, and I was giving this big fucking speech, and I was like
oh,
in the
no.
middle, and I was on the roll. Oh, I was no. on a roll, and I was telling a story, and what I had meant to say was like, you know, Heather and I have worked together, and we've had a tremendous amount of success in previous businesses. But what I actually said, and I'm in the, so you got to imagine we got like, you know, 60, 70 people staring there, and I'm like in this room.
And I'm standing next to you.
Yeah, I'm standing next to you.
Listening,
and
shaking my head.
And I'm like, so you guys, we are going straight to the top. I was like, you guys don't know about me and Heather. You don't know what's possible when Heather and I come together. Heather and I have worked together for many of years, and we've had a tremendous amount of sex.
He kept talking, and I was like, my face dropped, like, what did you just say? And everyone starts looking at each other and laughing, but Nick's still talking.
Because I didn't realize I said tremendous amount of sex. I thought I said tremendous amount of
success.
And everybody's laughing. I'm like, what are they laughing at? She's like, you and I didn't have sex. I'm like, I know. And she's like, no, you just said we had sex. I'm like, I didn't say
why
we had sex.
Why would I say that?
I'm like, we never
so
had sex. She's like, I know, you just said we had a tremendous amount.
It was horrible.
Oh, so that was...
Now, every time you say the word tremendous, even to this day, I get a little bit nervous before you say it.
A tremendous amount, like... how much,
not just normal sex, but a tremendous amount
yeah,
of sex.
How much, like, amount, how much sex is a tremendous amount?
I mean, it's got to be like...
Hundreds?
Hundreds, yeah, right? For sure.
Like,
definitely.
If you're like, oh my God, I had a tremendous amount of sex this weekend, like, what is that?
It was horrible.
Oh, God. And so, the second thing is you got this. Like whether it's I know you said we got this, but you got this. Whether it's in this venture together, mm-hmm. outside of this, I know that you got this. You got your family, and mm-hmm. and that's all you need. And I know that's your primary driver. And mm-hmm. and my family appreciates that. Mm-hmm. The Media Mix family appreciates that. The Next 90 families appreciate that. And so, thank you for being vulnerable and coming on the show and being somewhat kind to me.
You're welcome, and we should do it again because I have so many more stories.
We will.
So many more stories to tell you guys about, Nick.
Oh my God, we don't even have the time. Speaking of the time, if you want to join a mastermind, I've got one closing out on August 6th. We've got 3 more seats left open. You can email me, nick@ownthenext90.com. nick@ownthenext90.com. Heather is managing, building, running a massive empire called Media Mix 365. I am trying to build men specifically this time. Sorry, Heather. I'm trying to build men specifically this time who heard this story, what Heather was just talking about, of this broken man, this insecure man, this man who was running around trying to find himself, wearing shiny objects to distract from the crumbling that was happening on the inside. And I want to help you. I want to help you avoid some of the pain and the pitfalls that you might be in right now or that you're headed to by not recognizing that you need to invest in yourself and surround yourself with the right people. How do I know that? A lot of fucking pain, a lot of lost money, and a lot of lost sleep. So email me, nick@ownthenext90.com. There is an application process. I serve the community in the Next 90 Nation by doing this podcast for free. I serve men who want to take their lives to the next level by charging for this mastermind group. So it is not cheap, but then again, investing yourself never will be and never should be. So Heather, any final thoughts here for the Next 90 Nation?
This was fun. I like the core four. Challenges are good.
Yes.
Think more about women.
Yes.
And make sure, oh, and do my wonderful idea where you take one challenge all in one episode.
Mm.
I'd love to see a 90-day challenge at the beginning of your episode, hear the person, check in the middle, and see them at the end. I think that would be awesome.
Episode?
All in one episode. So you have like to time delay it.
Okay,
yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
That's
so maybe
gonna,
once a week or once a month, I'd love to hear. Because
I
get so excited about Mr. X, Y, and Z, but I want to know their whole story.
Got
and
it.
So if we could do it
all
in one episode.
Well, I'm bringing Mr. X back, so he'll come back. But
oh, good.
Yeah. So if you want to be a part of it, email me, nick@ownthenext90.com. Heather and I are going to go have a tremendous amount of coffee. And until next time, people, own the Next 90. I'm out. If you're interested in leveling up your life and you want to know how to get started, head over to ownthenext90.com. That's ownthenext90.com and download the Gap Map. The Gap Map will help you figure out where you are, where you want to go, and what's standing in the way. Get started today by heading over to ownthenext90.com. Go out there and own it, people. See you on the next episode.